Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, Houston. Alongside Clint Sterner and Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Branham on a Thanksgiving Eve edition of the show. I'm ready. I am so ready for Thanksgiving. I'm not going to mail it in today.
I promise you.
Look, I'm not going to mail it in today, but I cannot wait to stuff myself to misery tomorrow.
We know. For everybody out there in Houston, Jeremy just got through telling us how thankful he was to get to do radio with me and Wade on a daily, man.
That's true. Yeah,
he didn't want to put that out there on air, but hell, I thought it was such a nice gesture that I'd go ahead and let everybody know.
Some things are left better unsaid.
No. That one needed to be said loud and clear over the airways for all of Houston to hear.
No, they definitely need to hear that. He is very thankful to be here with us each and every day here on Sports Radio 610, and I am as well, man. So we're going to have a good day today and talk about a little turkey, talk about a little football, about some of this, some of that.
We have some Thanksgiving themes throughout the show, and we promise we have some football themes along the way, too. Yesterday, I was driving home. Cougars won. I was calling the U of H basketball game. I know you guys were dying, although I know you guys were listening and paying attention. But I was driving home, went to Christian's tailgate, got myself a cheeseburger, figure out that Duke and Stephen F. Austin are going to overtime. So I get into my car, and I listen to the final 5 minutes of overtime. Duke only scores 2 points in OT, by the way. And this was the final play as I was clapping in my car on my way home.
David Kinsmill comes up with it. Here's Bane on the other end. Bane on the breakaway. Bane on the dunk and the buzzer. Lumberjacks win! The Jacks have just beaten Duke at the buzzer. 85-83. SFA has knocked off the number one team in the country.
That was the call on the Stephen F. Austin Radio Network. I love how the play-by-play guy, he goes from, like, joy and elation to, like, shock and disbelief in that 20 seconds on that final clip.
Look, I mean, there's going to be a lot of Stephen F. Austin shirts worn at Thanksgiving this year, brother. There's going to be, I promise you, look, I got family members that went to SFA. They're Lumberjacks through and through. I promise you there will be SFA purple and white all over Thanksgiving lunches and dinners. The next couple of days for sure, man. So that, I mean, I feel like I can relate in a little bit of a manner being played in the SEC and a lot of games that we went into, we were underdogs. And so we had my last 2 years at Arkansas, we beat Alabama 42-6, which is in SEC terms, the worst loss they've ever had. And so those kind of things, when you're the underdog, you go in, you end up getting a big victory. It just means more. It's just you remember it for the rest of your life. I cannot imagine what the SFA players are thinking and feeling right now as they come back to Texas for Thanksgiving. They get to go hang with their fam and friends after beating the number one team in the country in arguably the most iconic college arena in all of college basketball. What a night for Stephen F. Austin. What a night for the school. What a night for the players and their families, and it couldn't have been better timing.
Yeah, man, that's one of the most the beautiful things about college sports and just college basketball in general is that you're going to have opportunities where you have a mid-major go against a historic program and the number one team in the country like Duke, and they can actually go out there and win a ball game and pull it off. You can't really replicate that in any other sport. When you talk about professional sports, everybody has a level playing field. Everybody gets the same kind of draft picks. But when you're at Stephen F. Austin, you're not going to be able to have multiple five-star recruits. You're not going to have any five-star recruits, but you're going to have a bunch of guys that can buy into a system, into a program, and go out there and win a ball game like that. They'll never forget that. Went to the University of Memphis as a mid-major school, although we're getting a lot better now. Yeah, but, I mean, when you played against, back in the day when I played against, you know, University of Tennessee or played against those SEC schools, you had a big chip on your shoulder and you wanted to go show them that, like, hey, you know, we can play with y'all too. And so to see a team like that go out there and do it and it's right up the street, man, that was awesome to see. And you see the guy that actually got the layup, that made the layup, that he was a kid from the Bahamas where his whole family had lost their church that they run and they lost their house. And so they started up a GoFundMe and they're trying to get him some money. And hopefully the NCAA doesn't mess this whole situation up and try to come down on him. But, you know, that kid went through a lot, and then now to be the one that made the layup, went coast to coast, like that wasn't an easy play that he made, went coast to coast and beat the clock, man. That's a beautiful thing about college sports, man. You got to love it.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw those numbers, but and I don't know how official it is, but I saw a tweet this morning that GoFundMe page went from 2,000 to 25,000.
I saw I got up to 60.
It's already up to 60.
Yeah,
wow, it's rolling.
Since I saw it this morning,
did you guys have a chance to see how the game ended in regulation? The highlight of the very ending of the game?
I didn't pull it up on my app yet.
Duke's got the ball down and underneath their basket, and they probably got four shots. And they're saving the ball, throwing it back in, and there's a Stephen F. Austin defender standing right in to challenge every single shot they took. And so the message of fight until the very end, right? And you somehow it's 81-81. They go into overtime, and the message is what? You give up 2 points in overtime to the number one team in the country, to Duke, in their own backyard, when all the odds are stacked against you. The defense, right? And then to score the final points the way they scored it, 99.9% of basketball players, I won't even say college basketball, would have pulled up prematurely before they had to and took a long-range, low-percentage shot. But this dude somehow keeps his poise, keeps his cool, goes all the way to the rack, and uses every second that was on the clock to get a high-percentage shot and allow his team to beat the number one team in the country. I mean, it's unbelievable. Believable, my man.
Number one team in the country that had not lost at a home non-conference game since 2000, 150 straight games. Stephen F. Austin was a 27.5-point underdog, biggest underdog to win a college basketball game in 15 years, and they were also down 15 points. Like, it come from behind at Cameron Indoor, a lot of teams in that situation. Look, it was a bye game. Duke was paying Stephen F. Austin to come into Cameron Indoor and play them. They were down by 15. A lot of teams roll over. A lot of teams lose that game by 20-25. Stephen F. Austin forced OT, won that game. Congratulations to them. Nathan Bain, the guy who hit the game-winning layup, they had that GoFundMe, and as Clint said, went from $2,000 to about $60,000 since the victory. So that's one awesome positive, like a life thing that's coming out of it. So that's really cool to hear that happen.
You talk about a powerful thing is immediate, and I don't know how coaches do this. Like, immediately following the game in the post-game presser, he, instead of being, like, overly excited, you know, he mentioned a few things, cool, calm, and collected, and then kind of made a quick little case for the Sun Belt Conference to get more than one bid into the NCAA tournament, right?
Yeah.
And so you talk about a coach's mind, right? The biggest win in school history, I don't know what his career consists of, but I got to believe that's the biggest win of his coaching career. And instead of just being off the charts, excited for everything around him, he's cool, calm, and collective, and he's pleading the case for the entire conference, Sun Belt Conference, to get an additional bid into the NCAA tournament. It was pretty cool, man. Congrats to all my Lumberjack Nation out there, all the folks that I know that and everybody else, even the ones I don't know. Congrats to you for a big-time victory. You should enjoy this one to the fullest. And look, don't let anybody at Thanksgiving dinner give you any crap, right? Don't let them give you any crap, because no matter where they went to school, they didn't go to Duke and win in Cameron Indoor. That's for damn sure. So don't let anybody cool your jets. You stay high, poke your chest out, peacock around Thanksgiving dinner, baby. It's going to be fun.
The oldest town in Texas celebrating a victory against the number one team in the nation. That will make for some pretty good Thanksgiving conversation. Other college athletics news. College football rankings came out yesterday. The biggest news was that Ohio State jumped over LSU in the college football rankings. They asked the College Football Playoff Selection Committee Chairman Rob Mullins about it afterwards, and he said about Ohio State, they're a balanced team, strong on offense and defense. Obviously, LSU has a very strong offense, but to date, their defense isn't as strong as Ohio State's.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they've missed a couple. Divinity at their linebacker position has been out a couple of games. Delpit missed, I believe he missed the Arkansas game. But when things get tough, when it comes cutting time for LSU and they got all their pieces together, their defense will be nasty. I promise you that. I was in Death Valley this last weekend. Which I knew this was true. It wasn't this was true when I played. It was true. Wade, you can relate to this because you played. Tennessee was that way. There weren't as many teams in the East, but you got Alabama, Auburn, Mississippi State is this way. LSU's definitely this way. They are in the trenches. They are huge. I mean, it's just I don't know where they get these guys, but in the trenches they are absolutely huge. I agree with the rankings. I believe Ohio State is the number one football team in the country right now, most complete team in the country right now. But we're really splitting hairs when we start talking about LSU and Ohio State, because I believe when it comes cutting time, LSU will be a very, very, very good defense. And I'm talking about in comparison to the elite of the elitist.
Yeah, man, both teams deserve to be considered the number one overall in the college football playoff rankings. And so you're really, like you say, you're splitting hairs between the two of them. Both of them, I think, are on a collision course to play in the championship game. And I think it's going to be a situation where it's going to come down to, you know, which team can make a key stop, because I don't think either one of their offenses are going to be slowed down too much. I think both their offenses have so much firepower. I know Chase Young is a Heisman candidate, and he's killing it at that rush end position. But the left tackle for LSU is nice. I don't even know his name. I just know that he's nice.
He's nice.
That dude is nice. And so I'm going to be looking forward to that matchup. I think he's just a sophomore now. That's why I don't know his name yet. But that kid is good. And so it's going to be a knockdown drag out if those two can navigate all the landmines that are going to be in their way on their path to get to that matchup, because you know LSU is going to have to see Georgia, and Georgia's going to have something to say, you know what I mean, in the SEC championship game. And Ohio State still has, they're going to play in the
It's still undetermined. They have either Minnesota or Wisconsin.
I think it's probably going to be Wisconsin, but yeah, they're going to have to play another solid game. But Ohio State, to me, both sides of the ball, straight up and down, they're the best team in college football, and LSU has a legitimate case. But That's the good thing about it is you're just jockeying for position between 1 through 4, but you're in it, and all you have to do is be in it. That's the only thing that matters.
Well, I would say this: it doesn't matter a whole lot on who's 1 or 2. I mean, it depends on who you're going to play in the semifinals, and that still has to shake out as well. Clemson's at 3, Georgia's at 4, Alabama's at 5, and you have all the other one-loss teams: Utah at 6, Oklahoma at 7, Minnesota at 8. Baylor was the biggest jumper; they jumped all the way to 9. They went up 5 spots after the victory against Texas, and then Penn State fell to number 10. After their loss to Ohio State. So, I mean, it's still going to – like, who you play in the semifinals is somewhat important. But Ohio State and LSU would both be favored in that game.
Some people, the conspiracy theorist out there will tell you that the LSU got bumped down to avoid an LSU-Alabama game.
I hope that's the case, because nobody wants to see that again. You already saw that already. But
I agree.
The Clemson game – or the Clemson, maybe we can take this to the next segment. But Clemson, are you a believer in them? Because if I have to choose between playing – a Georgia or Alabama or somebody like that, or playing Clemson, I think right now I would rather play Clemson. To me, they haven't really showed me much this year. They're not the same Clemson that we've seen over the past few years.
Well, LSU probably will get Georgia in the SEC championship game, and what happens there will factor into a whole bunch of things as well. So still a lot to play out in the college football playoff and the chase to the college football playoff. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, I'm Jeremy Branham. Coming up next, the Patriots are 10-1. That's the Texans' opponent on Sunday Night Football. Are we disrespecting the 10-1 Patriots? We talk about it next. Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham. Like, the Patriots are 10-1. They're 10-1. And I feel like the Patriots are being disrespected. All I hear about is that Tom Brady's not as good. Tom Brady's over the hill. Their defense is carrying them, but it's because of their strength of schedule. Yeah, their defense is pretty good, but it's not elite. It's because the teams that they played are not very good. And the Ravens, they're favored to win the Super Bowl ahead of the New England Patriots. 3-1 favorites for the Baltimore Ravens to win the Super Bowl. The Patriots second at 13-4. But it's still the Patriots. It's still Tom Brady. Like, Brady's fifth in the league in passing. He has just under 3,000 yards this season. Fifth in the league in passing, yet we're saying he's over the hill. Like, he's only thrown 5 interceptions this season. That's not all that bad. And they're top 10 in offensive efficiency, yes. Like, we look at their offensive stats, and when you look at them, they're 17th in the league, 8th in passing, 24th in rushing. But let's keep in mind that they're 10-1. The reason that their numbers aren't as good is because they've been ahead in all of these games. They've been winning all of these games. They don't put themselves in a position to where Tom Brady needs to throw 300 yards to put his team back in the game. So I'm looking at the Patriots, a team that's won 6 Super Bowls, a team that is 10-1, that they're still rolling. I feel like they're being disrespected. I think it's the most disrespected 10-1 team we've ever seen.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if disrespect is the right word for me. Anyway, I look at it as I think they're rightfully so. They've played a piss poor schedule. They've got some very very, I guess a no name group, which shouldn't surprise us, because Brady does more with less than anybody in the league over his career. He's thrown touchdowns to different more different receivers than anybody ever in the league, and that number continues to climb as they rotate guys through the offense as of late. And so, you know, I don't know if disrespect is the right word, but I think as I look at it, I think it's legitimate. Evaluation from a negative standpoint. Like, legitimately, they don't have the weapons on offense that they've always had. They've never had the best, the most thorough group. They've never had the deepest group of skilled players, but they always had two or three that could go make plays. And so right now, I think it's a fair evaluation that they've got less skill at the skilled player position on the offensive side of the football than they typically do. Right, I think that's a fair evaluation. The schedule I mentioned, I think that's a fair evaluation. Now, where guys are coming in talking about Brady's getting old and Brady's slowing down, I beg to differ. I watch the dude play. You watch it on live TV. You watch it on the coach's cut on film. And there's nothing slowing down about that. If anything, he looks better. He moves better than he did when he was younger. He's better built. I mean, it's the whole thing that Tom Brady at 42 is better in every facet of the term than he was when he was 32.
Jeremy, you don't have to sit here and convince me that the New England Patriots are a hell of a football team. No question about that. They are 10-1 for a reason. Now, Tom Brady for sure has not fallen off one bit. I looked at the same film that Clint looked at. I was watching him play it against the Cowboys, and he was making every throw. Now, his receivers weren't catching passes. We talked about Julian Edelman yesterday and him possibly being disrespected or disregarded, but there's a couple plays that he should have made that he just dropped passes where Tom Brady put the ball right on the money. And so those would have been drives where they probably would have gotten points or scored touchdowns. But the guys around Tom Brady are failing him. It's not Tom Brady. I've been watching him play this year, and people that say Tom Brady is falling off, they're not really paying attention. They're just looking at the box scores, and that's something that people sometimes do.
But even the box scores aren't bad.
But, I mean, and then when you said that he had five interceptions and that's not that bad, I mean, that means he's making one interception every other game. That's a hell of a season. That means you're going to end up with about eight interceptions on the year, and he probably is going to end up close to like 30-plus touchdown passes. So that's a hell of a season. It's just people want the Patriots to fail. I want the Patriots to fail. Everybody wants them to fail. So you try to find ways to try to pick at whatever you see where you see weaknesses. And that's understandable, but you ain't got to convince me that them boys good. They can play football and they have the best coach and they have the best quarterback of all time. And so they're going to be ready to play on Sunday against the Texans.
Wait, they're the epitome of not beating themselves, right? And that's timeless. It doesn't take an abnormal amount of talent every year on a roster to when the best thing you do is not beat yourself, not make mistakes. You don't miss opportunities. And it's one of those things where as you look in hindsight, hindsight's 2020, so I'm not telling anybody anything, but in hindsight, you look back, it's no wonder they've had a huge amount of success with essentially doing more with less because of how they win and what they specialize in and how they go about every week. I think it's not very sexy. You know, it's no fun to sit around and talk about how they play football, but it wins football games.
There's no doubt about it. And I think that, to your point, Smitty, I think people were trying to talk it into existence. Clint, Smitty, JB discussing the Patriots, their 10-1 record. I would say this, like, we got a texter, 713-572-4610. They aren't beating teams like they have in the past. Now it's more about the defense than Brady. To me, it's the fact that they're getting ahead and they're managing the game out the rest of the way. We were talking about it in our pre-show production meeting, Clint, and you were talking about how they beat the Cowboys last week. They jump ahead early, and at that point, it's pretty much over because the Patriots can rely on that defense.
Look, I can't recall a team out there in college or in the NFL that literally changes their approach with like minute to minute, quarter to quarter, situation to situation. If it's a low scoring game and Belichick knows his defense is dialed into what the opponent is doing, they are A-okay with running it on first and second down, getting in third and four or five, and then depending on Brady, which he's pretty damn good at, converting on that third and five and keeping the drive alive and chewing the clock and just staying that course. And then the minute that opposing team makes a play and takes a lead and there's 3 minutes left in the game, they'll jump into empty and they'll go all gas, no break, no huddle, use tempo and come back and beat you. And so I've never seen a team I can't even remember anybody close, Wade, that had the ability to change gears and was so comfortable just keeping it close and being in control and then getting out with a victory. I've never seen a team as comfortable doing that as the New England Patriots.
It's the Patriots' way. That's how they operate. That's why so many people try to emulate that, but they always fall short because you cannot be the creator of something. You can hope to try to imitate what they're doing, but you cannot be to that level. You can't do it to the level because you didn't create this. You didn't come up with this idea and this scheme of how to operate. And everybody that comes into that building, they put on them that expectation that there's a certain set of parameters you have to fit yourself into. And if you don't get down, you're going to get gone.
Yep.
And so everybody that's in there, they understand. And there's guys that have played all over the league that they don't like going to work every day in New England, but they know they're going to win. So whatever they say to do, they're going to buy in and do it. You don't have to worry about buy-in in New England. You know that the pelts are on the wall. You know these guys have 6 championship rings in, 20 years? Like, nobody has ever done that. Nobody else will do that again. And so when you have guys that are veteran guys that will come in and plug and play and they're talented, but yet they'll dumb down any of their own egos in order to win, now you have an advantage over everybody else that you play. And so they've done a great job of cultivating that, and that's why who they are. But at the same time, they can be had. I've seen them get beat. I think this Texans team can beat them, but you're going to have to play an A1 ball game to win. You cannot make mistakes. You cannot have mental errors. You cannot beat yourself because they will beat you. And so that's the test. It's almost a fight against the man in the mirror in order to beat the New England Patriots.
Like, that offense, it doesn't have Gronkowski anymore, but you still have guys like Julian Edelman, who's having an underrated season, a really good season. James White is a really good, he's a really good pass catcher out of the backfield. Not a great runner, but a good pass catcher out of the backfield. They traded for Sanu. He's a pretty good piece. Sonny Michel's not a bad back. He was drafted pretty high when the Patriots drafted him. Good. He's 11th in the league in rushing touchdowns. So, like, they don't have the arsenal that they used to in the past, but Brady's got some pretty good weapons.
Jeremy, you don't have to be – it doesn't take a ton of talent. It takes a lot of talent to play in the league. It doesn't take elite guys in the league to understand, hey, they're playing cover 3 or they're playing cover 2. It's that we want to attack the seams, or we want to attack the sidelines, or we want to attack the middle of the field. They got a play caller that'll scheme it up. They got guys that'll get to those voids, right? And then if a team does go, well, our zones ain't working, or they're running the football versus our zone, we got to get up and we got to play man. Edelman is one of the best in the league at creating separation. He's not the fastest. He's not the biggest. But he will create 2 to 3 yards for a 2-second period, for a 1-second period, and Brady will get that football in there. So versus man, they got answers. Versus zone, they're really good, and they're committed to the plan. And so it's one of those, you don't need elite players when you take what the defense gives you.
Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham on a Thanksgiving Eve edition of the show. Coming up next, we're going to go around the NFL. J.J. Watt's really close to adding another accolade to his storied career. We tell you what that is next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham with you. We were talking about this last week, the NFL 100 putting together their all-time team. This is the 100th year of the NFL. They unveiled their running backs last week, last Friday. They're going to unveil some more position groups every Friday through mid-December, late December. Earl Campbell, one of the 12 running backs on the NFL 100 all-time team. That was good to see. Well, J.J. Watt has been named a nominee for the Defensive End Award, so we might have 2 Houston football players, Earl Campbell and J.J. Watt, on the NFL 100 all-time team by December.
Do we know how many defensive end slots there are in the 100 all-time?
I think that there was 15 nominees. I want to say there was going to be 6 or 7 on the team. I'll look it up for you.
Yeah, I don't think that's a stretch. I mean, it's to be in the conversation at the very least. I haven't crunched the numbers to see who all how many greats there are, but for J.J. Watt to be in that conversation, I don't believe is a stretch at all.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, I think there's only 3 players that are currently active that are even on the top 100 list, and so for you to be one of those 3, that says something. And so J.J. Watt, I think that, if he didn't have as many injuries, he'd be a shoe-in. But I think that since he's had the injuries, he might not get in. But just like I said, even though just the fact that he's being mentioned in a conversation, that is a huge deal. You really can't ask for anything more to be recognized as an all-time great in your sport. And so J.J. Watt has had a career that's warranted that, and hopefully he ends up making the team, man.
There's 33 defensive linemen. I was thinking about just defensive ends, but they're going to put him in as defensive linemen. 33 defensive linemen, 14 of those will be on the all-time team. That includes defensive ends and defensive tackles. So we'll see if J.J. Watt makes the NFL all-time 100 list. Jerry Jones went on Good Morning Football today and was kind of vintage Jerry Jones. We've talked about Jason Garrett ever since the loss that they had against the Patriots, and they're asking Jones about that, and Jerry Jones flat out said that, you know, look, I'm a Jason Garrett guy, or Garrett's a Jerry Jones guy. I can't quite tell what he's talking about, but it sounded good.
No one in this country has earned the right to say I'm a Jason Garrett man more than me. I am his man, and we want the very same thing, and that's for our players to play at their very best, and we want his staff to coach at their very best. The bottom line is we get graded. I'm in business. I don't have to win the Super Bowl in business every year. I can come in sixth and have a hell of a year. But in this business, you've got to come in first. You've got to come in first. And so fundamentally, you've asked for something that's a very narrow window to begin with. I want Jason to get it done.
So I don't know if Garrett's a Jones guy or Jones is a Garrett guy, maybe both, I guess. But that was pretty entertaining what Jerry Jones had to say.
I think they're both they love each other to death. Hell, Garrett better love Jerry. He paid him good while he was playing, and he's overstayed his due in Dallas at this point and made a nice chunk of change in the process. And look here, last time I saw Jason Garrett, he was in my spot. Javier's in Dallas over in the corner. Cheeks were nice, rosy and red. He must have been having him a couple of nice little margaritas, probably skinny margaritas because he ain't a buck 80 soaking wet. But he's living that life in Dallas now. So there's no doubt about it that Jason Garrett is a Jerry Jones guy. And the simple fact that Jerry Jones has allowed him to remain the Cowboys coach for 9 seasons tells me that it's working both ways. They're both big fans of each other. But you know what, man? All good things must come to an end, and it sounds like Jerry Jones is saying, hey, you got to get right ASAP, Thanksgiving Day. Get right on Thanksgiving Day, or we're going. Some heads are going to roll, some seats are going to get hot, and this thing may come to an end.
Fellas, we talked about this, I believe it was on Monday. I told you there was 3 things that were guarantees in life: death, taxes, and Jason Garrett being the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. those comments that Jerry Jones has made, they don't change that. All he has to do is win the division. He's going to come in first. He wins the division, he's going to beat the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys going forward. And I have no reason to believe that they won't come in first. They're going to play the Bills at home tomorrow. They'll beat the Bills because the Bills are a good football team, but I don't think they're going to be able to go on the road and muster up enough offense to beat the Cowboys. The Cowboys will end up having to play the Eagles, and when they win that game, the division will be clinched. And so he's going to be the head coach going forward. You know when Jason Garrett is going to stop being head coach of the Cowboys? When Tom Brady retires. When that happens, that's when. And so and people have been asking for that for I don't know how long. 10, 15, when is Tom Brady going to be done? We don't know. Nobody knows. Jason Garrett is going to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
I couldn't disagree more. Look, if he doesn't make a significant run in the playoffs this year and get this team playing right, Jerry's going to give him the papers. Give him that old pink slip.
We got to put a bottle on this, baby. We got to put a bottle on this.
I'm in.
What kind of you want to do? Bottle of what?
Bottle? Well,
yeah, what kind of bottle do you
want? I suggest Jameson.
Jameson?
I usually do cold Coors. I usually do cold beer, but I can't let you get off for an old 12-pack or a case. I'll take a bottle of Casamigos Reposado Tequila.
Okay, so you want tequila? I'm a big fan of dark liquor, so I'm gonna probably have to get some. What do I want from this guy?
Some kind of hen. Come on, man.
I mean, I already got a bottle of Hennessy coming from Landry because he told me that Kyler Murray was not gonna be top 3 in rookie of the year voting, and so I basically just suckered him into that bet. So now I'm about to sucker you into this bet. Let me think on
what's the parameters here, though, because like you said that he's going to be there forever. You said he's not going to be there forever. Like, when does Garrett need to be fired?
He said that if he doesn't go on a significant run in the playoffs this year, he's gone.
Okay.
He got to win the division.
But you got to quantify significant. Like,
win a game.
If he wins a game and let's say if he wins one game in the playoffs,
all right,
he's gone. Chief, he's out.
I love this bet. This is amazing.
Winning the division ain't going to get it done. He's out. He's done. He's crocodile.
Right, so is this
crocodile
official?
This is official.
Right now, he's Kiefer struggling. He wins one game in the playoff. Hey, look here. One game in the playoff, he's going to be Crocodile Dundee.
All right, well, you know what I mean? Y'all's bet is made. Mike Freeman of the Bleacher Report agrees with you, Clint. He's reporting that the Cowboys are ready to move on from Garrett unless he wins it all. Unless he wins it all. The report cites that Jones is most interested in Urban Meyer and Josh McDaniels from New England. So we'll hurry up and wait. We'll hurry up and wait to see what happens with Jason Garrett in Dallas. But Jerry Jones also has some other business to worry about, like his quarterback, Dak Prescott, in the final year of his deal. And Jerry Jones was asked about that and kind of took it his own direction this morning.
Let me just say this. I think all of us, including the fans, want to win a damn football game. Okay? Now, I know we've got a lot of other things to think about. Who's coaching? Who's playing? Who's compared to another player someplace else? How about let's win some ball games, folks? We can take out other stuff. I'm not known as a guy who gets hand cramps when I'm writing checks, but I want to win some football games.
No cramps from writing checks for old Jerry Jones. Boy, he went vintage Jerry Jones this morning on Good Morning Football. I'm highly entertained. I don't like the Cowboys at all. I don't really like Jerry Jones. I'm glad he's not the owner of the teams that I root for. But he's fun to listen to, and it's really entertaining.
Look, there's no doubt about it. It's entertaining, and it's entertaining because there's a ton of Cowboy fans out there, and there are a ton of Cowboy haters out there. There are very few people that sit in the middle of those two groups and goes, "Ah, well, I could really care less." Right? I mean, there's you either love them or you hate them, and right now, what's going on in Dallas? The fact that they're losing, and the fact that Jerry Jones is talking about his players and his coaches not doing their job, essentially, and not winning football games. People love it, man. It's entertainment at its best.
Listen, Clint, winning cures everything.
No
doubt. That's all he's trying to say right there is, listen, man, let's win some ball games. Y'all worried about how much Dak getting paid? Dak's going to get paid, but he needs to worry about winning ball games.
They ain't beat a team with a winning record yet, bro. If they beat Buffalo.
Sound like Alabama to me.
You're talking about a team that ain't missed the college football playoffs yet.
I'm just saying.
Why'd you go Alabama?
I mean, Alabama. That's the first one that came to my mind. They ain't beat nobody. they beat the Texas A&M Fighting Aggies. That's the best team on the schedule they beat. But I'm just saying, they haven't beat a bunch of good teams. Granted, that's great. But how many good teams have the Patriots beat? Are we looking at the Patriots and saying, oh, they're a terrible team?
But the Patriots are 10-1. Yeah. The Cowboys are what, 6-5? Well,
you got to play the teams in front of you. The Cowboys' schedule is much more difficult than what the Patriots have played. That's all I'm saying. They've played. Yeah. They lost that game in New England because of a couple of terrible calls and the elements, period. I think they're going to come back and win this game against the Bills. I think the Cowboys have too much talent on that roster for them to not win the division. Philadelphia has no wide receivers. They have injuries on the offensive line. Their defense is struggling. They're not going to muster up enough wins to win that division. The Cowboys will win that division. So if you win that division, now you have a playoff game at home.
Yeah.
You win that one game, I'm about to win this bottle.
Think about who you would play, though. Like, you're probably going to have to play, like, Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, it's
really
going to be
team.
Tough.
Like, that's not an easy home game.
It's not. No, there is going to be no such thing as an easy game in the NFC playoffs. Every game is going to be a title battle.
Yeah. The East is garbage. I mean, you look at they're winning the East, right? The NFC East right now, and they hadn't beat a team with a winning record yet. And so you're probably right. They're probably going to win the NFC East. But it's just when it comes down to it, man, like, we're not talking about the Patriots. We're not talking about Alabama because they've earned the right to not be discussed in the same light. They've earned the right to not be discussed based off of their schedule to this point by the fact that they're in every damn championship for the last 10 years. The Cowboys have underperformed multiple times since 95 when they won one, right?
Of course they have.
So the Cowboys
and JJ's still here.
Yeah,
that's my whole point. He ain't going nowhere.
I disagree.
And they're going to win a division. So, Jerry Jones is going to be like, like I said, I believe it when I see it. Until it happens, I don't believe it's going to happen. Just like Tom Brady, he ain't going nowhere until he goes somewhere. Until then, I believe it.
I heard John Lopez talking about on In the Loop earlier today that he was comparing Bill O'Brien with Jason Garrett, which you can look at the records. They're pretty similar, to be honest with you. I think Bill O'Brien's a better head coach than Jason Garrett, but I'm curious what y'all think.
I mean, I think the jury's out. I mean, I think you got two teams that have done enough, like Wade said, as far as JG keeping his job, Jason Garrett keeping his job in Dallas. I think both coaches have done a good job and really created some stability relative to doing what you're supposed to do what you're expected to do, win the division, get into the playoffs maybe. But at that point, the drop-off is significant. And so the problem at when that's the case, the problem is when it happens time and time again and there's no run in the playoffs, there's no signature victories, there's still disappointing losses like what we hear Jerry Jones talking about, it just it tells me that the gap between where you're sitting as an organization and the Super Bowl contending teams, is that gap is very large. And so I think the two teams, Houston and Dallas, are in when you're talking about head coaches, have done a very similar job relative to doing what you're supposed to do, but yet not in the same conversation where you're a playoff contender and a Super Bowl contender. So it's very similar in that respect.
Well, I look at them like this. Both coaches, like you said, have similar records, similar – they've been able to produce similar results when it comes to wins and losses and the types of wins and that they have on their resume. But Bill O'Brien has shown that it's when it's in a triage situation where, you know, he's down a quarterback, he's down multiple people at a position, he's figured out ways to win ball games. Where I can't say the same thing about Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett, he doesn't – and I don't cover him as closely as I cover Bill O'Brien and the Houston Texans, but – I don't think there's any wins you can point on Jason Garrett's resume where you say, you know what, he did such an amazing coaching job in this particular game that that's why they won the game. But you can point to those examples in Bill O'Brien's resume. So for that reason, I would say he's a better coach than Jason Garrett.
Clint Smitty, JB, going around the NFL on Sports Radio 610. The NFL, did you see what they told the Cowboys, by the way, from that Patriots game? We talked about the tripping penalties that the Cowboys had that really it's stopped one of the drives that the Cowboys had. Who knows what would have happened later on in that drive. But there's some school of thought that Bill Belichick might have tipped the officials that the Cowboys have been doing this sort of thing to be on the lookout for it. But the NFL did tell Dallas, our bad, we were wrong. Those were not tripping penalties.
I mean, how can you overcome that? Because that's a crying shame. Wade, you and I talked yesterday about the Houston Texans, and we know they've had penalty problems in key situations, particularly one of those situations being coming out drives, first drives of football games. They've had penalty problems. They've had turnover problems. They've had three and out problems, and they're well documented. But then this week against Indy, or last week against Indy, you get a holding call, and we all look at each other like, here we go. But you go back and watch the film, Titus Howard didn't hold anybody, right? And then you look at that Dallas game, there wasn't no tripping. There was two tripping calls in that game, and it wasn't even close to tripping. And so, to me, those are two calls that should be very, very obvious. They've been around the NFL for years and years. Not one of these new rules that's being applied or enforced differently. It's a rule that's been around for years. Should be blatantly obvious. Throw the flag. If there's any gray area, you don't throw the flag. And so, It just baffles me that these kinds of plays continue to be discussed following NFL Sundays or NFL Thursdays for the Texans.
Listen, days. I completely believe that Bill Belichick, going into that game, told the referees to watch out for the tripping on the offensive line. And the reason why is because during that game when they played the Cowboys, they ran a lot of pick games where they were taking linebackers on the second level, running them into either the center and picking them and hitting them in the hip and running them into the left tackle like they did to Tyron Smith. And once someone's body runs into your hip, your foot on the same side of that hip that gets hit, it's going to raise off the ground.
Hip bone, leg bone, type of deal.
It's kind of like a, you know, for every action, there is an opposite reaction. So right. You get hit on the hip, your foot is going to pick up in the air. But the guys literally Olay'd both times and got their legs out of the way. But because Bill Belichick told him in advance of the game, hey, watch out for the tripping, he knew when I run these type of games, that's what it's going to look like. And so he got the call. You got to give him credit for being Bill Belichick. And that's something that the Texans are going to have to look out for going forward into this game, because the New England Patriots won't generate much of a pass rush without doing things like that. They don't have the guys up front that they've had in the past that can just beat you on one-on-one pass rush. And so the Texans are going to have to be aware of that. And the guards are going to have to do a really good job of using their hands to punch guys to keep everybody on the same level, because once you get on different levels, that's when that stuff happens. But yeah, the referees, man, it's like, it's almost as if though they haven't been watching football their entire lives to know that those were not tripping calls. And so the apology afterwards, to me, that's like a slap in the face. Like, hey man, we know we messed that up. We're sorry. Yeah, we took this L. Now we got Jerry Jones on TV this morning talking about, if I'm Jason Garrett, I'm like, now he's talking about me and my, just, What would the conversation have been if they would have won that ball game about Jason Garrett and the Dallas Cowboys? It'd have been completely different. It's a great victory on the road. You went into New England this week. What does that mean for the Patriots? They're playing to keep their first round bye because now they have to play the Texans. If they lose, then now they're in a dogfight to just keep the first round bye, and they're going to lose home field advantage. These calls are huge, yep. And the referees, they have to be held accountable. That's my problem with this is, like, after every game, a player has to stand in front of the media and answer questions about what he did right or what he did wrong. Same thing with a coach. But the referees, they don't have to do that. And they're making calls that are terrible calls, and they should have to answer to that. And yep. I think if they did that, there'd be more accountability. But right now, we're just dealing with the parameters that we have set before us, and it sucks, man.
Wade, there's another one you'll love as an offensive lineman. I watched Bosa in San Francisco versus the Rams on Monday night. I watched, was it Monday night or Sunday night?
Sunday night.
Sunday night.
Anyway, I watched Bosa bear hug a tackle and pull him down so the wrapping end could
go. Defensive holding, tackle. Yeah.
It would look like a bear hug. Like, he literally, it looked like he was chasing the guy to bear hug him, and they didn't throw the flag.
They called one, and they didn't call that. But the defensive guys are going to do that until someone calls it. And sometimes the refs see it, sometimes they don't. But that's a natural part of the game. But, yeah, man, the refs, I mean, they've been struggling this year, and it's something that they got to get corrected, especially before the playoffs.
My thought on officials, just in general, innocent until proven guilty. Like, if it's not obvious, don't call it. It's my general thought when it comes to that. But I like your idea of the officials being accountable as well. I want to remind you about something very important that's going on in the city of Houston. BrothersInArmsHouston.com. You might remember we talked to Andre Ware a few weeks ago. He, Warren Moon, Vince Young, and Deshaun Watson, they're coming together in partnership with the Houston Sports Authority to form the Brothers in Arms Diversity Scholarship. Here's what you need to do. If you know a high school senior athlete that's being raised by a single mother, nominate him for the Houston Sports Authority Brothers in Arms Diversity Scholarship at BrothersInArmsHouston.com. The winner will be announced at the 2020 Houston Sports Awards presented by Insperity on January 21st. Make sure you do that now at BrothersInArmsHouston.com. Coming up next, why don't the coaches of Bill Belichick's coaching tree win big? Clint Sterner, Wade Smith, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.